Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of The Grueling Truth. I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster. We got a great show, as always, for you tonight. First, let me welcome in, as always, my NFL guest host, which is Matt Andrew Scavage.
Thank you, Mike. Good to be here.
All right. So tonight, it's been like a month since we've had a 49er on, and everybody knows how pouty Matt gets if we don't have a 49er on at least once a month. So he can bring up all the Super Bowls his team's won and how pathetic my team is. Because, I mean, everybody is. We were talking to Dexter earlier. I was telling him how Matt always bullies me. So everybody knows that, too. I get all kind of tweets that people really feel sorry for me all the time, too. So without any further ado, I'm going to introduce one of the top kick returners in the NCAAs in the 1980s up through 1989. Played at Florida State for legendary Bobby Bowden. Then he went on with the San Francisco 49ers. One of their main kick returner, 1994 Super Bowl 29 season. Help me welcome to The Grueling Truth, Dexter Carter.
Hey, it's a pleasure being on The Grueling Truth with Mike and Matt.
Well,
we appreciate
great to
you
have
being
you.
Here.
Hey, appreciate
All right,
it, man.
So
looking
let's
forward
get started
to
from the. Okay, let's get started from the beginning. Just tell us a little bit about your childhood. At what age you started playing football?
Well, I started playing at 8 years old and. Got involved because, my mom loved the Dallas Cowboys. So I became a Dallas Cowboy fan from 8 years old and thought I was Tony Dorsett. So from Pop Warner on, that's exactly who I was, Tony D out in the yard. And man. So I ended up, from 8 years old playing up through Pop Warner and middle school and high school and obviously, everybody probably knows some of the story from that point on, but I'm sure we'll fill it in throughout this show.
So, Dexter, what made you want to play your college football at Florida State?
Well, coming up through high school, I was a 150-pound running back as a sophomore and junior in college and had what some of the reporters in the state of Georgia called a whopping – like Herschel Walker season. My junior year, I had 1,800 yards rushing, and I went to my high school coach, and I said, hey, coach, I'd like to, go to a football camp, because I was getting some notoriety, but, I wasn't getting any offers. So he came back to me about 2 weeks before the summer, after my junior year, and he had one application. And I just knew it was the University of Georgia because I was a Bulldog and a Atlanta Falcon fan, but it was definitely not a Georgia application. It was a Florida State, and that was back in like 1985, and it was Florida State, and I had never heard of them, and I'm glad he did it because when I went to Florida State that summer, and out of 300 and some kids. Leroy Butler, the Green Bay great, was part of that camp there, and we both went in as freshmen together at Florida State. But nonetheless, I was the fastest kid in the camp and one of the smallest. So I did enough to get Coach Bowden's attention, who offered me a scholarship. And he had me at hello. That's when I learned about who Bobby Bowden was and man of his word and an honorable man. And no matter who came calling my senior year, Bobby Bowden had me that summer. So, and an interesting part of that story is about 8 years ago, I finally went to my high school coach, who's a very good friend of mine, and I asked him, I said, why, out of all the teams around the Southeast and the country, why Florida State? And he said, because I knew coming from a small town and you being a small player, although very talented, that I had to get you in front of coaches so they can see your talent. And he said at that time, Florida State coaching staff was one of the very few coaching staff that actually ran their football camp. So he knew if I got in front of those coaches that my talent would show them, you know, what my ability was, and it worked out great for me.
You mentioned Bobby Bowden, one of the greatest college football coaches in history. Just, do you have any memorable stories about him, or just what kind of man was he to play for?
Oh, man, you know, what you see is what you get. A lot of people, probably about 95% of the people that ever talk to me about Coach Bowden say, man, was he really real, or is that all a front? I say, no, he's that Christian of a man, and, you know, he loves his boys, and sometimes to a fault. A lot of people think he gives you, you know, second, third chances, but, you know, he's a father figure. And he tells your parents whenever you go to school there that he's going to, you know, take care of you. He's going to punish you whenever you do something wrong, and he's going to love you, you know, the same. So he just, in my opinion, still today, I called his house 2 days ago. And Ms. Ann answered the phone, and she said, well, Bobby's not here, but he's coughing. As soon as he comes in, I tell him to call you. You know. And what's crazy is anybody that can walk right up to his house, man, in Tallahassee, that is crazy. He still will say, hey, buddy, how you doing? You know, to anybody who walks up to the door, is crazy. But that's the kind of guy he is. And I tell you, a story about him is my freshman year. Every freshman that comes in, he always had you fill out a card, a 5x7 index card, saying what were your goals for that year. And, you know, you got this freshman coming in at 165 pounds, and actually more like 150, but I was just imagining that I was soaking wet and I was 165 pounds. But anyway, he had me fill out this card along with the other freshmen. And my goal was to start as a freshman. And he tells this story, and he told it every year in football camps. I had high school coaches tell me this over the years. He said, man, this freshman just says that, hey, he wants to start. I guess he didn't know about Sammy Smith, who was a sophomore coming into that year and was a Heisman hopeful. But he quickly learned it didn't matter who, you know, it's kind of like I tell people and I tell my teams that I coach, it's not who we play, it's how we play. And that's the way I felt as a player. I always was feisty, but I had to be because I was always smaller than everybody else, so I had to do a little bit more to prove my worth. And that's what I felt. I didn't care who was in front of me. I just knew that if I gave the energy and effort that I knew I was capable of doing or giving, then I knew I would have a chance to compete. And so he laughed at me and, you know, behind the scenes. But it's interesting. Once training camp was over and I had a chance to get on that field, I actually was second team. I bypassed everybody except Sammy. But then I ended up still starting the very first game because Sammy got hurt. And I always tell a joke pertaining to that story. I say, you know, up at the football players' apartments, I scoped Sammy out one evening, and I hid behind the cars. And when he walked out, he didn't see me, and I hit him with a billy club in the knee. So I could start that first game. Everybody thinks it's kind of funny, and then I have to admit I was just joking. But nonetheless, I still started my freshman year first game because Sammy did get hurt. And you know, but that's the way I went throughout my whole career. I just outworked people and did the same thing as a freshman. A rookie at San Francisco, I worked my way up to second team behind Roger Craig. And, you know, when Roger got hurt about 4 or 5 games into the season my rookie year, I ended up, you know, starting enough games to lead the team in rushing my rookie year.
Right. When, you know, in college, you know, you're getting ready to graduate and get you know, go into the NFL. And as you look back, either now or even back then when you're getting ready to go to the NFL, what were your most memorable game or your favorite moments looking back at your collegiate career?
Oh, man. You know, of course, my freshman year playing one of our two biggest rivals, which was, you know, Miami and University of Florida. But the Miami game, my freshman year, on CBS national television with Brent Musburger announcing the game, and had a chance to we had a throwback on a kickoff return that we had been working on for weeks, you know, maybe about 3 to 5 weeks. And you never know when you're going to use it, but we just practiced it just in case. And nobody knew we were going to use it. My freshman year, you know, Vinny Testaverde was the quarterback, you know, for the Hurricanes, and they had Michael Irvin, you know, all those great guys back in, you know, in the in 1986. And we get ready to go out there for the kickoff return, and Coach Bowden calls the throwback, and I take it back 105-yard kickoff return, although I only took it back 95 yards, because Keith Ross brought it out of the end zone, threw it back across field to me. And if you ever watch it on YouTube, I scooped it up like a shortstop. I always tell people, hey, I had some baseball skills and was pretty good in baseball too. And maybe we'll share that story some other time. But yeah, that was a memorable moment of my collegiate career. And then and Miami also was another memorable one. My senior year, I first play of the game, I took it back 45 yards for a touchdown, you know, on first play. Well, actually, Leroy Butler intercepted the ball the first play of the game from Gino Toretto. And then I took it back about 45 yards, you know, around the left corner, which is also on YouTube. You know, so that was the year that Miami won the national championship, although we beat them. So that was kind of weird. But unfortunately, they beat Miami later in the year, which was obviously a key game for them that kind of propelled them back up ahead of us. But those two games against Miami were great. I had some, you know, really good University of Florida games, you know, where Sammy Smith and I would both have 100 yards against University of Florida, and that was when Emmitt Smith was there. So those are great moments. Of course, the two Fiesta Bowls against University of Nebraska, and have a chance to just play very well in those games. So some great memorable moments for me in college.
Well, then you go to the NFL. You're drafted in the first round by the defending world champions. What were your expectations going into the season? And then as you talked about, Roger Craig gets injured. You took over. What was it like for you as a rookie to step in for a longtime starter for the current Super Bowl champions?
Well, before I get to that part of the story, I have to bring people current on why I feel I ended up a first rounder, because my senior year, you know, 3 out of my 4 years, we were ranked in the top 3 teams in the country. We were 3 in the country twice and 2 in the country once, but we could never get past University of Miami. And then when we did get past University of Miami, unfortunately, the first game of my senior year, Brett Favre, and many people forget who Michael Jackson was, and not the singer, but Michael Jackson, the receiver that played for the Cleveland Browns for a number of years. Man, my freshman year, we played Southern Miss in the Gator Bowl in Jacksonville, and they snuck up on us and stunned us. You know, that's when Brett Favre, you know, name kind of surfaced on what he could be. And and then we ended up losing to Clemson the second game of the season. So we ended up having to come back and tear everybody else up to pull back up in the top 3 in the country. But we were a majority passing team my senior year. So I finished the season with about 700 yards rushing. So when you think about that and you wonder, why did a guy become a first-round draft pick for the defending Super Bowl champions? Well, at the end of the season, I don't believe that I was a first-round prospect. What occurred was I ended up being selected in the Senior Bowl and played for Buddy Ryan, who loved to hit. And we played against Marty Schottenheimer and the North team. And I ended up having a great week in practice and doing a lot of things that they didn't think that a small guy could do. I ended up, you know, having a great rushing day, receiving day, and got MVP on the offensive MVP on the South squad. So after that game, you know, before the game, I was a projected 3rd through 5th round draft pick, which is pretty much 3rd round is where I was projected. And then after that Senior Bowl, and then I went to the combine and kind of blew that away and was the fastest running back in the combine at 4.34 and have 38 vertical. And then after the Senior Bowl, and then after the combine, you know, Mike Holmgren, offensive coordinator for the 49ers, came through Tallahassee and put me through a grueling workout and plays that the 49ers would run. And by the time that workout was over, you know, my projection has skyrocketed. So, you know, there was a number of teams that were interested in me in the first round. But I felt comfortable that if the 49ers had a chance when their pick came around, that there was a possibility that they would draft me. And being the two-time defending champions, they pretty much had every position locked down in San Francisco. But they were looking for somebody to, you know, to be a possible backup, not necessarily a starter, because I don't think I was drafted to be a starter. But they were in a position to draft, I call it for luxury at that point in time. And so when they drafted me, I was pretty confident and happy, you know, to go out to the Bay Area and do, like, you know, who was it, Sam Cooke, that sang the song From Georgia to the Frisco Bay?
Yeah.
You remember that song? Well, that's what I felt like. So, you know, but going out there as a rookie, I didn't have any expectations. I had the same thing I had as a freshman in high school and as a freshman in college. You know what? Don't let anybody outwork me. Have a lot of energy and effort, and just my God-given talent and abilities, you know, be exposed. And that's what I did my rookie year, and had a chance to work my way up, you know, through the depth chart and be second team coming into the season. So at some point, you know, if you're not who you say you are, or your worth ethic isn't what you say it is, or your abilities aren't what they say it is, at some point, it's not about fooling people, you know, because you can't fool professional football coaches, the Mike Holmgren and the George Seifers and those kind of guys. So by the time my rookie training camp was over, I felt like I belonged. I felt like that I could, you know, contribute to the team. But everything was new for me at that time, and my rookie year was so important to me as far as training camp, because there was one guy that was instrumental and I believe helping Mike Holmgren and become confident in me, and that was Joe Montana. Joe believed in my abilities and spoke on my behalf. I believe he never told me that, but I know he had to, because everything on that offense was through Joe. And when Roger Craig went down the fifth game of the season, Mike Holmgren didn't even hesitate to pull me right into the lineup. But as I said, once again, I moved into second team running back, but I don't think they drafted me to be the guy to start. But to have a chance to fill in for Roger Craig, and in my opinion, fill in admirably, I think, you know, leading the team in rushing as a rookie, you know, even going through the growing pains of a rookie, still stands out in my mind and a rookie year that I'm proud of.
Right. So, you know, you basically you step in for Roger, and obviously you got to be feeling a little bit of pressure. You're playing for the world champions. They had, you know, I think they started off, I believe, 10-0. Had a loss to the Rams, won the showdown against the Giants, and then as you're trying to lock up home field advantage, guys are playing against the Rams, and you know, they're up only by single digits, and you rip off your first touchdown, a 74-yard run that not only iced the game, but I believe it iced home field advantage to the playoffs.
Yeah,
so what did that mean? Go ahead, talk about that game and what that meant for you personally.
Yeah, I believe I think that was the first game that I started, I believe. I'm not really sure. But nonetheless, it was on Monday Night Football, and all I can recall, even when I see it today, I look at it and all I say is, man, Joe Montana gave me the ball. but that was a 74-yard touchdown run that, you know, for the first time, exemplified my breakaway speed that they drafted me for. And I remember Ronnie Lott. See, Ronnie probably was the toughest 49er that you had to prove your worth to. Ronnie never spoke to me until the Monday after that game. Now, on the sideline he did, but I mean, I felt comfortable having a conversation with him because we were practicing on Monday, and I had ran a play, and I went, you know, 60 yards down the field like we all did at that time, and Ronnie was on the sideline on a knee, and I was jogging back to the huddle, and he said, "Hey, rookie, good job, man." And I was like, "Dang, Ronnie said hello, man. He said something to me, you know." But you had to prove yourself to those guys, and that game was instrumental, along with the rest of the season, proving myself to, you know, the biggest guy that you had to convince, which was Ronnie Lott. So, I think, you know, Joe, I had already had convinced without words, and having Ronnie and Roger Craig was the greatest mentor that I could have ever had. And he's still a great guy today. Hadn't changed a bit. So I couldn't have had a great group of guys to learn the profession from and how to deal professionally with the good and bad that comes, you know, because there's always good and bad, you know, because you don't always have a good game. So, but you got to be able to compartmentalize things and move forward, you know, from a business perspective. And I hope that I learned and I represented the 49ers and those players well as I continue to develop through my career.
Hey, for anybody tuning in, I want to remind you we're speaking to Dexter Carter, former San Francisco 49er running back. Let's go. The 1990 season ended with a heartbreaking loss to the Raiders to the Giants in the NFC Championship. Roger Craig ended up moving on, signing with the Raiders. Talk about the offseason and what the camp battle for the starting position was like that next year.
And before I tell you about the battle, that NFC Championship game, the possibility of going to three straight Super Bowls, 4 minutes left in the game, they have no timeouts. We're on their 40-yard line, so really all we've got to do is just, you know, run the timeout and we win the game. So, and everybody,
Oh, yeah.
4 minutes to go, and they had no timeouts. And unfortunately, you know, there was a mishandle on the handoff between Joe and Roger. The ball pops up in the air, and the ball goes right into Lawrence Taylor's hands. So he gets tackled. So Hosteller takes the Giants down the field. There's about 4 seconds left on the clock. They're on about the 8 to 10 yard line. And I remember the coaches. I had never been on field goal block in my life. And for some reason,
You that dives.
Exactly. Absolutely. And I
forgot about that.
And they said, "Dexter, get in there." And I'm like, "What? I don't know how to block no kick." You know, and I had never practiced on it. So I was the closest one to the ball, but surely not close enough to even block it. But all I remember is being on the ground, looking back, and seeing that ball go through the uprights, and I felt terrible because, you know, when you're a rookie and the team has had a great year, in my opinion, and we're that close to NFC Championship, you know, another appearance in the NFC Championship game, with pretty much a guarantee, you know, whoever won the NFC usually goes to the Super Bowl and wins it. So we go in the locker room, and everybody thought the game was over so much. Everything was still in our locker room. The most terrible thing that a rookie ever could experience, the champagne was still in there, the shirts, NFC champions were shirts were in there. I mean, all the celebration stuff. So you know, somebody was heartbroken. I was heartbroken, man, to the point to where I learned very quickly. if you're ever in the NFL and you are and you're in the NFC Championship game and you lose, the Super Bowl is guaranteed. You won't be watching it because you're so hurt and, you know, dejected. There's no reason to watch it. You surely won't be going to the Super Bowl. So, you know, unfortunately, I went to four NFC Championship games, lost three of them. So there were three Super Bowls that I just said, the heck with it. You know, I had other plans during the Super Bowl while the Super Bowl game was on. But
well, Dexter,
I think I
Dexter, real quick, I would like to thank you because the 1990 NFC Championship game, every time we talk to a San Francisco 49er, is always skipped over because Matt does the questions for the 49er players, and he always skips over that game. So it's true, though, Matt. You got to admit it. Because every time
well,
I bring a game up, you're like, oh, we don't want to talk about that. We don't want to talk about that.
It's Super Bowl 23.
Yeah, well,
hey,
well,
but you know what? The 1990 NFC Championship game is one of the most underrated great games in NFL history.
It was a great game. It really was.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a great game. And, you know, and one of those that went down to the wire. So it was one of those that we should have had, but it just goes to show you that in this game of football, anything can happen. And in that game, you know, it did. It looked like we had a game won. And, you know, it is what it is. So we, you know, we live to play another year and going into the next season, just to kind of jump on what you said later, Roger Craig was gone, and I learned something then. Roger Craig and Ronnie Lott, I believe that was the year that they Ronnie went to the Raiders. No, they both went to the Raiders, I believe. And then the next year was the Joe, you know, situation. And I learned very quickly that the what NFL really meant, and that was not for long. And no matter how much you do for an organization, when they think you're too old or they think that, you know, it's time to go, then they're going to ship you out. So when you're young in your career, you don't think about it. But when you see some great 49ers like that be shipped out and then – you start witnessing the Joe Montana and Steve Young transition. It bring a lot of things to the surface, and from a reality perspective. But once Roger left, I knew that once again, as I said, they didn't bring me in to start. But I knew based on my performance that I would have a chance to start. But I believe Keith Henderson was our big back and would get most of the carries for that 1991 season. And we, you know, we pretty much shared the background, the backfield that year, although I started, but I knew he would get most of the carries. He was a big, strong back and, you know, and I filled in and I think I had like 385 yards rushing that year. I'm not sure what he had.
Hey, real quick, let me remind everybody, this is the live part of the show will be over in 90 seconds. So if you're listening now, it'll cut off at the bottom of the hour. But at the top of the hour, midnight, just go to the Grueling Truth Facebook page or the Blog Talk page, or you can find us on Twitter also. You click on there, you can get the last 15 minutes of archive time there. So, Matt, I think the next question's yours.
Yes, sir. So, yeah, after the 91 season, a lot of changing of the guard, like we talked about. You know, Steve's the starter now, and you know, you're like we talked about earlier. You know, you're right in the middle of the Joe and Steve quarterback controversy, leading into the '92 season. Anything you want to share about the quarterback controversy, and then we shipped right into the Dallas Cowboy rivalry that you're right in the heart of as well. So you had all kinds of stuff going on.
I know, and I wish I could share it all, but being a young guy, I learned a lot of stuff, and one of them was, again, Joe was part of that, Roger Craig, Ronnie Lott, you know, Exodus. Joe came a year later, but, you know, just seeing the great player that Joe Montana was, and the transition was kind of interesting to me, because even when Joe came back and was healthy and could have started, just like those other guys could have continued to start, Ronnie Lott could have. But Steve Young, and I won my Super Bowl with him. He's a great guy, and, you know, and I love him, you know. But Joe Cool was something else. But the thing that I realized is Steve became very, very uncomfortable with Joe around because Joe still had that aura of Joe. And Joe never came out to practice with us, even though he was healthy. He used to have to come out after practice because Steve didn't feel very comfortable with, you know, Joe looking over his shoulder. And, you know, and I kind of can understand a little bit, but what I couldn't understand is, man, that's Joe Montana, you know. But but Joe used to come out after practice, and him and Jerry would, you know, throw his routes and all that kind of stuff, which was kind of a weird situation. But, you know, at that time, the 49ers realized that they were transitioning to Steve, and Steve pretty much, you know, what Steve wanted, Steve pretty much got at that point in time.
Well, you talked 1992 and 93. The 49ers had a couple great seasons, but the Cowboys kept getting the best of them. Can you talk a little bit about the Dallas-San Francisco rivalry of the 90s and what it meant to you to be a part of that?
Oh, yeah, I'd tell you what it meant to me. You know, I told you my mom was a Cowboy fan, so I grew up a Cowboy fan. So I had to grow to hate the Cowboys. You know, I had to, I did. Because, you know, there was, what, 4 years there that, 3 or 4 years that it was back-to-back, you know, us and the Cowboys. And so they were a great team, just got to, you know, admit that. And we knew that if we got to the NFC Championship game, it was going to be us against them. So it's frustrating to know that there's about, you know, 3 more Super Bowl rings that – are on their fingers that should have been on mine, but I tell you, I wouldn't have had it any other way to have a chance to be in a game that I don't think there's 2 teams that probably play that consistently against year in and year out that you knew that whoever won was going to win the Super Bowl. So I'm glad I had that experience, you know, with the 49ers and playing against the Cowboys and having the experience of having Dion come over, play with us, then leave us and go play with Dallas, you know, after playing with Dion, you know, at San Francisco and with the Seminoles, and just seeing, you know, the great impact he had, just being, in my opinion, you know, one of the greatest NFL players of all time.
Exactly. Agreed with that. So 1994 comes around, gets the free agents in there. Looks like, you know, this might be the year which the Niners can finally vanquish the Cowboys. So, you know, go through some injuries earlier on in the season. You know, you were the primary kick returner and the punt returner. You had a big kick return against the Redskins at RFK to basically seal that game, setting up the Dallas game the next week, which won that. But, you know, during the season, you know, with Dion there, there was always talks about Dion lobbying to get on special teams, get on offense, and, you know, you're the primary kick returner and punt returner. Is there truth to that? And if so, what was that like for you in, going through that?
Well, you know, one, remind me just in case I get off track, but when Dion came to San Francisco, one, I knew his abilities as a kick return guy. I knew that if I was to hold him off, because the 49ers were going to play the best players at the position, you know, I mean, a lot of people still would say, hey, well, Dion still was the best kick returner, you know, possibly in the league. Well, if you look back at 1994, which was my closest year that I came to making a Pro Bowl, because I was second in the NFC in punt returns and in the top 5 in kickoff returns, and I think I had over a 10-yard punt return average, and just had a successful year. But nonetheless, Dion was campaigning, you know, but I think it's like if productivity is positive, then it's hard to change what's happening. And that's the way it was with me. And, you know, I was having great productivity, and no matter how much he campaigned for it, I held him off based on my performance. So, but, hey, that was my guy. You know, I'm glad he came, because I had a number of players from Harris Barton, you know, who was a great offensive tackle for the 49ers, Jerry Rice. They all came to me when Deion, when it was thought that he was coming to the 49ers. And they said, Dexter, is he really a cancer in the locker room? And I told every one of them, I said, guys, if you play against Deion, you got to hate him. Because all you see is the flash and dash. All you see is the jury. All you see is the selfishness and the arrogance. But I said, in the locker room, there is no greater locker room teammate. And every one of those guys that came, Guy McIntyre is one of them. Every one of them that came to me inquiring, would he be a cancer, came back after the fact and said, you are right. Because that's just the type of player he is. Now, once the lights come on, I told him, I said, now, I'm just telling you now, when the lights come on, when you go on road trips, hey, when you walk out of that front door, hey, prime time is going to be at the forefront. It is what it is. Hey, you know, but he did what he planned to do when he came to Florida State. He knew playing DB, he was not going to get paid a lot of money. And he knew if he was going to get paid a lot of money, he had to transition into, he had to morph into a super character. And he perfected it about as well as anybody I think has perfected a second personality or however you want to call it. And he did it with skill and elegance. So, but again, every one of them loved him. Jerry Rice, you even had Jerry dancing a little bit after a touchdown or two. Steve even got a little funky with it every now and then, you know. But they loved him. You know, they loved him. He was different. You know, doesn't mean they were going to hang out with him after practice, you know. But once we were in that locker room, in between those lines, he was the consummate teammate.
Well, we got about 5 minutes left. I do want to touch on one thing, though. Your first 4 years, you got very close to the Super Bowl, 3 of those 4 years. What was it like in 1994 for you to finally play in and win a Super Bowl?
Oh, it was crazy. Not only crazy and exciting because I finally got the one, you know, it didn't completely erase those memories of my rookie year when I went into that locker room and saw all the champagne and all that still in there after a loss. But it happened at the perfect time for me because, one, my home was Fort Lauderdale. So with the Super Bowl being in Fort Lauderdale / Miami, it was awesome having a whole week there and having Coach Seifert allow me to stay at home, you know, for a few days, you know, and then, you know, the last, you know, couple of days, you know, at the team hotel. It was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. It was surreal. The whole thing was kind of hard to really explain. Even Kathy Gifford, whom, in my opinion, had the worst national anthem ever, I still enjoyed it, you know, because it was a national anthem at the Super Bowl. And I hope she's not listening. I hope she's not listening because she's a wonderful lady. But you know, we've had much better national anthems. You know what I'm saying? But she did an admirable job, though. But it was great, though. The Super Bowl was just awesome, especially after having so many missed opportunities, you know, with the Cowboys, you know, and then my rookie year against the Giants. So, you know, the fourth time was the charm.
Well, we're going to kind of just to sum up the rest. Basically, you know, 95, I was sad to see you go, but obviously, you know, it's business and you got to do what's right for you and your family and stuff. And so you moved on to the Jets. I was glad when you came back and became the first player in the history of the NFL, I believe, to play set all 17 games in a regular season because of the way the bye week fell. And then he had the big punt return against the Vikings. I remember where I was when I saw that. I'm glad to have you back. I did get a tweet from
Kathy Lee Gifford, was it?
Hey, check
yeah, no, it wasn't from Kathy Lee Gifford. I did get a tweet come through from Denise Niner Hines, the Niner Queen, she says. she wants to know, what do you think the 49ers need to do differently with the set of running backs we have today compared to what we have been used to with Frank Gore?
Oh, you know what? One, we all know Frank Gore is still a great running back, and he's going to, you know, hopefully they won't play against the Niners, but he's in the perfect system there in Indianapolis and got the best quarterback situation he can be in other than Kaepernick. But Hyde, I knew when we drafted Hyde, if we'd have talked before then, I'd have said Hyde is the future. And I see a situation just like the great 49ers that I saw pushed out. I see him eventually, unfortunately, pushing Gore out. And although Gore still got some years, but Hyde is going to be a great, in my opinion, a great running back, and bringing in, we just brought in Bush, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And he wants to do punt returns.
Hey, I think they should let him. I'm telling you, I think he increased the value of that 49er team, increased the punt return abilities, and increased that second team running back who still has it as a receiver out of the backfield and just getting the ball to him in space. So I think our team is better with Bush, with Hyde, although I love Gore. But I think now that things have settled with the coaching staff, as long as we get those young guys to fill in those defensive positions, I think we're going to be okay.
Well, we got about 2 minutes left. I know that you've had some conversations with Matt about possibly doing a San Francisco 49er weekly show.
Absolutely, and we're working on that now, and hopefully we'll get that solidified, and we'll all be doing the Niner show during the fall, and hopefully Niner Girl will tune in and tell all of her, you know, Niner friends and fans that we're going to make it happen, and hopefully we'll get a contingent of fans listening to the show.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
I would also like to announce in the fall we will also have a Cincinnati Bengals show because they made the playoffs last year and the Niners didn't. And former Bengal linebacker from Super Bowl 23, Joe Kelly, will be our co-host with that one. And then we've got former Pittsburgh Steeler, Jacksonville Jaguar, Miami University offensive lineman Leon Searcy will be in every Wednesday night to pick all the NFL games with myself, Matt, and Joe Rodriguez, who's our co-host sometimes. He's on the Tuesday night boxing show. Speaking of the Tuesday night boxing show, we'll have John the Iceman Scully next Tuesday, fought for the light heavyweight title a couple times, is now one of the lead boxing analysts at ESPN. And the week after that, we will have former middleweight champion Kelly Pavlik. Dexter, it was great having you on the show tonight. Great guest. Even though it is about the 49ers, at least it wasn't about the 49ers that beat my Bengals in the Super Bowl. So, Matt,
that's
you
right.
Got any final comments?
Appreciate you being here, Dexter. I always enjoy listening to all the stuff I grew up watching. Just really great getting a perspective from the locker room and someone who played on those teams.
All right, absolutely. We have more evenings just like this right here, my man.
Well, I think we could have made this about a 4-part interview anyways because we still got about 20 questions, I think, to ask. So.
and as you can see, I've got a whole lot more answers, too.
There you go. That's what we like is guests with answers because guests with no answers is very boring.
That's true.
Hey,
I look forward
so remember,
to it,
next Tuesday. Yeah, remember, next Tuesday night, Grilling Truth Boxing Show, John Scully. Next Thursday night, the NFL show. A guest will be announced in the next day or two for that one. So for Matt Andrew Scavage, I'm Mike Goodpaster. This was the Grilling Truth. Catch us the same time next week.